JC2S, Part 1.
Number 4B.
It is convenient for history to record limitations and to regard evil as real. But it is impossible in science to believe this, or on such a basis to demonstrate the divine principle of that which is real, harmonious, and eternal, that which is based on one infinite God and man, his idea, image, and likeness. In science, we learn that man is not absorbed in the divine nature, but is absolved by it. Man is free from the flesh and is individual in consciousness, in mind, not in matter. Think not that Christian science tends towards Buddhism or any other ism. Per contra, Christian science destroys such tendencies. Well, we see then that, yes, she says, I monopolize on the basis then that she shows that these human philosophies, Western, Eastern, tend towards sensuous reasoning in some way, somehow holding spirit in the grasp of matter, somehow theosophy or pantheistic tendencies of holding reasoning in the grasp of duality. And now we see that that then is the last enemy that must be overcome, is this imperfect reasoning. And then showing that her divine philosophy then is based on and only on that reasoning that comes from mind. Now, what she shows then is that this divine philosophy, through the translation and retranslation going on through the laws of translation and retranslation, reformation, are bringing then what is called a material philosophy or a mental philosophy or a mortal mind philosophy or human philosophy out of itself, out of this false basis of reasoning, back into its original basis of reasoning, which then sees it as the divine philosophy of God. So we see then that this happens in so far that philosophy then makes that translation from a material basis, from reasoning based on matter, theosophy or pantheism, out of itself into much more what is seen as a metaphysical dualism, much more into a mentalism basis, finally into the divine philosophy of God. Now, when we take this term of what is philosophy, and as we looked at last summer, we saw then that philosophy itself just means the loving of wisdom. And there we have that coupling of love in mind, the love of wisdom. And we could ask ourselves, well, do we need a philosophy? And certainly we see, yes, that a philosophy is needed, especially in a science that is revolutionary, a science which is changing. A philosophy is invaluable, actually indispensable, because it's on a philosophy that a worldview is based. It is that wisdom, it's on that wisdom, on that worldview, that a science bases itself, or a theology bases itself, or a medicine bases itself. There always is some worldview, some paradigm from which the sciences go out, from which the theology goes out, or medicine goes out. So therefore, if the philosophical worldview is materialism, that all is matter, then we see that the sciences can pattern themselves after that, a material science or material reasoning in theology, even to the sense of an anthropomorphic God, or to materialism in medicine. So Mrs. Eddy shows then that human philosophy has no demonstrable divine principle of healing. She says it's mainly predicated of matter. It's mainly pantheistic, holding mind in materialistic reasoning. But she shows then that through the Christ translation and retranslation, that the materialistic basis or the reasoning from effect to cause through the Christ law of translation and retranslation begins to attenuate and drop off, and as we see that it goes into a metaphysical basis, much more a mental basis, finally into this divine philosophy. So she shows then that the philosophy which she has brought forth then is a divine philosophy, and that a philosophy to be a philosophy, she shows, has four aspects. That a divine philosophy must be a postulate from the divine principle God. A divine philosophy must start with God. You see, there it is, always the word. Starting with correct reasoning. The statement must be correct. This is why she goes against the human philosophies which do not postulate totally from God, from starting completely from the word, from God. That's where she says, Christian Science refutes everything that is not a postulate of the divine principle God. It is the soul of divine philosophy, and there is no other philosophy. So divine philosophy starts with its statement from God. Then she shows that every divine philosophy has a Christ. That postulate from God, which starts from God, has a Christ. And that is the divine philosophy, which is demonstrably the true idea of the Christ. So it's only a divine philosophy that has a Christ. It's only a divine philosophy that is demonstrably the true idea. That is the true idea at work of the Christ. And then her divine philosophy, she shows as an outcome of that divine philosophy which goes out solely from God, reasoning from mind, from spirit, from soul, from principle, from life, from truth, from love, that only that philosophy has a Christ which is at work. The outcome then is a spiritual Christianity embracing divine healing. Where she says, today we behold but the first faint view of a more spiritual Christianity that embraces a deeper and broader philosophy. So that the outcome of a divine philosophy is always healing. Always. Never just talk, 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 talk. Doesn't just stay in the realm of intellectual discussion. But it has an impact. It has a Christ. Whereas in human philosophy, the intellect, it goes on and on within the letter of thesis, antithesis, synthesis. But a divine philosophy from the word has a Christ and has an outcome in that it always heals. And with the science aspect, she shows that a divine philosophy is always God's right hand grasping the universe. Meaning that a divine philosophy is not the search after wisdom, it is wisdom. It is God's right hand grasping the universe. Here's that sense of science then, that as in most philosophies, they're always searching after wisdom. In divine philosophy, it is wisdom. In fact, that wisdom is governing and interpreting the universe. Then we take a look at what she talks about in this chapter as far as Christian Science versus the physical sciences. And again, the same argument proposed. Anything that reasons out from the human mind, from sensuous reasoning, has nothing to do with the science of God. Her issue is not with the concept of science, but with its basis of reasoning. So again, it's Christian Science versus physical science, but it isn't that there's Christian science on one side and physical science on the other. No, she's showing, therefore, that the law of the Christ and his translation and retranslation is bringing the sciences out of a physical definition through a more mental definition of sciences, finally into a spiritual science, Christian science. Back into its original basis. So let's look then, it's the same logic that she uses in reasoning concerning the human philosophies, the same standpoint. She says, as we've seen in miscellaneous writing, science is absolute and final. It is revolutionary in its very nature, for it upsets all that is not upright. It annuls false evidence and saith to the material five material senses, having eyes, ye see not, and ears, ye hear not, neither can you understand. Okay, so then we say, what is science? And she shows on page 126, all science is divine. Human thought never projected the least portion of true being. Human belief has sought and interpreted in its own way the echo of spirit, and so seems to have reversed it and repeated it materially. But the human mind never produced a real tone nor sent forth a positive sound. So, all science is divine. And then she shows in this chapter, there is no physical science. Inasmuch as all truth proceeds from the divine mind, therefore truth is not human and is not a law of matter. For matter is not a lawgiver. Science is an emanation of the divine mind and is alone able to interpret God aright. It has a spiritual and not a material origin. It is a divine utterance, the comforter which leadeth into all truth. For 124, she shows adhesion, cohesion, and traction are properties of mind. They belong to the divine mind and support the equipoise of that thought force which launched the earth in its orbit and said to the proud wave, thus far and no farther. The term science, properly understood, refers only to the laws of God and to his government of the universe, inclusive of man. Then on page 128 in the textbook, science relates to mind, not matter. It rests on fixed principle and not upon the judgment of false sensation. Then in answer to the question, what is physical science? She shows here on 124, physical science, so-called, is human knowledge, a law of mortal mind, a blind belief, a Samson shorn of his strength. When this human belief lacks organization to support it, its foundations are gone, having neither moral might, spiritual basis, nor holy principle of its own. This belief mistakes effect for cause and seeks to find life and intelligence in matter, thus limiting life and holding fast to discord and death. In a word, human belief is a blind conclusion from material reasoning. This is a mortal, finite sense of thing which immortal spirit silences forever. So then we see then, as she shows here on 124, that the universe, like man, is being interpreted by science from its divine principle, God, and then it can be understood. But when explained on the basis of physical sense and represented as subject to growth, maturity, and death, the universe, like man, is and must continue to be an enigma. Then, under the question, what impact does science have on physical science or the scientists? On page 107 in the textbook, she says, through Christian science, religion and medicine are inspired with the diviner nature and essence. Fresh pinions are given to faith and understanding, and thoughts acquaint themselves intelligently with God. Or 128 in the textbook. From this it follows that businessmen and culture scholars have found that Christian Science enhances their endurance and mental powers, enlarges their perception of character, gives them acuteness and comprehensiveness, and an ability to exceed their ordinary capacity. The human mind, imbued with this spiritual understanding, becomes more elastic, is capable of greater endurance, escapes somewhat from itself, and requires less repose. A knowledge of the science of being develops the latent abilities and possibilities of man. It extends the atmosphere of thought, giving mortals access to broader and higher realms. It raises the thinker into his native air of insight and perspicacity. And then on page 268, in the material world, thought has brought to light with great rapidity many useful wonders. With this like activity, has thought's swift pinions been rising towards the realm of the real, to the spiritual cause of those lower things which give impulse to inquiry. Belief in a material basis from which may be deduced all rationality is slowly yielding to the idea of a metaphysical basis, looking away from matter to mind as the cause of every effect. That's the point, huh? And then the goal of this science of God, as this chapter shows, science, theology, and medicine, that mind is all and matter is not, as a leading factor in mind science. And that in the third degree, mortal mind disappears, and man as God's image appears. So science so reverses the evidence before the corporeal human senses as to make this scriptural testimony true in our hearts. The last shall be first and the first last, so that God in his idea may be to us what divinity really is and must of necessity be all-inclusive. So we see then that the same that is happening to philosophy then is the same that is going on, of course, with the sciences, that the Christ in its law of translation and retranslation, where what God is, the right reasoning, the correct reasoning from mind, has its impact on the world sciences, bringing those sciences, therefore, from the first degree of a materialism basis of science, what is called natural science or physical sciences, taking the basis of that science, which is materialism, bringing it out of its material basis, we see then through the mental, or really first through what the sciences are attenuating out of a physical science into what is much more of a dualistic metaphysical basis. You know, today that's more where the sciences are, in a dualistic metaphysical basis, where they still reason concerning matter and energy, but that this reasoning is based on mathematical laws. So today you get a sense of what we would call dualistic metaphysics, of a sense really of matter and energy being talked about in relationship to mathematical laws, and that matter has to obey these mathematical laws. And you know that mathematics is certainly a metaphysical science. So you get an attenuation out of a totally materialistic realm into a much more dualistic metaphysics for the basis of the sciences, and then into which we see today much more what Rupert Sheldrake has proposed in his theory of morphogenetic fields, where they see then that much more that science, this whole evolution that goes on within this morphogenetic metaphysics, where there are these fields of information, which are really what they call what kind of an evolving fields of information that are constantly changing, constantly evolving, forming, carrying on, and leading on the sciences. This, then, we see finally will come in from this standpoint of just metaphysics into the standpoint of spiritual science, which really then is this subject of the science in this chapter, the sixth chapter, which is really then that science which is based on then Allah's infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, really based then on the fields of the field of mind, the field of spirit, the field of soul, the field of principle, the field of life, the field of truth, the field of love, which gives us then the field of God, which is the standpoint for working in a spiritual science. Then we take just quickly a look at another issue she brings up in this chapter concerning Christian Science versus mythology. And we see then that in this chapter, it's the first time that mythology is mentioned in the textbook. And she shows here then how she looks at the concept of mythology, what mythology is as she defines it. Let's take a look at it. She says that, what is mythology? She says its origin is the belief of life, truth, intelligence, and substance in matter. On page 294 in the textbook, she says, the lines of demarcation between immortal man representing spirit and mortal man representing air, that life and intelligence are in matter, show the pleasures and pains of matter to be myths, and that human belief in them to be the father of mythology, in which matter is represented as divided into intelligent gods. Or she says on 319, the very doctrines and theories which presuppose life and intelligence to exist in matter are so many ancient and modern mythologies. Or she says on page 523, the creations of matter arise from a mist or false claim or from mystification and are not from the firmament or understanding which God erects between the true and the false. In air, everything comes from beneath, not from above. All is material myth instead of the reflection of spirit. And then on page 594, she defines the serpent as subtlety, a lie, the opposite of truth named error, the first statement of mythology and idolatry. And then through various statements in the textbook, she reduces the whole basis, really, of the of a false science and a false theology and a medicine just to mythology, which is really just then the second record of creation. She shows then that mortal mind in its beliefs of minds many, matter, body, material senses, theories, death, mortal man, imperfection, they're all myths. She says, the hosts of Asclepius are flooding the world with diseases because they are ignorant that the human mind and bodies are myths. On page 552, she says, the mortal mind claims to govern every organ of the mortal body. We have overwhelming proof. But this so-called mind is a myth and must, by its own consent, yield to truth. Or in the glossary, she says about mortal mind, that mortal mind is nothing claiming to be something, for mind is immortal, that it's mythology, air creating other airs. A suppositional material sense, alias the belief that sensation is in matter, which is sensationless, a belief that life, substance, and intelligence are in and of matter, the opposite of spirit, and therefore the opposite of God or good, the belief that life has a beginning and therefore an end, The belief that man is the offspring of mortals. The belief that there can be more than one creator. Idolatry. The subjective state of air. Material senses. That which neither exists in science nor can be recognized by the spiritual sense. Sin, sickness, death. Then in the glossary, she also reduces matter to mythology. And then, on page 490, she reduces material senses to mythology. She says, sleep and mesmerism explain the mythical nature of material sense. Sleep shows material sense as either oblivion, nothingness, or an illusion or dream. Under the mesmeric illusion or belief, a man will think that he is freezing when he is warm, and that he is swimming when he is on dry land. Needle thrusts will not hurt him. A delicious perfume will seem intolerable. Animal magnetism thus uncovers material sense and shows it to be a belief without actual foundation or validity. Change the belief and the sensation changes. Destroy the belief and the sensation disappears. And she even reduces on page 249 personal theories to mythology. She says, let us rejoice that we are subject to the divine powers that be. Such is the true science of being. Any other theory of life or God is delusive and mythological. And of death, on page 186, if death is as real as life, immortality is a myth. And then the Adam man. In the glossary, she says, Adam is nothingness, the first god of mythology, not God's man, who represents the one God in his own image and likeness, the opposite of spirit and his creations, that which is not the image and likeness of good, but a material belief opposed to the one mind or spirit, a so-called finite mind, producing other minds, thus making gods many and lords many. And then even the last point in the human system of reference is presented in the second record of creation, imperfection, a myth, 470. If man has lost perfection, then he has lost his perfect principle, the divine mind. If man ever existed without this perfect principle or mind, then man's existence was a myth.